Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, it's Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show, presented by Church Health, caring for people all around us. Give today at churchhealth.org.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what's this we're listening to?
It's California Stars by Billy Bragg and Wilco, primarily Wilco, a Woody Guthrie lyric. Send that out to the Golden State Warriors who advance to the NBA Finals.
Are you going to grill on Memorial Day?
I don't know what I'm going to I have no idea what I'm going to do. My wife and son are going to be out of town.
Oh, I see.
And my daughter will almost certainly be doing something with her friends and, like, not around.
Right.
And so I don't have any particular plans around Memorial Day, no.
Right. Normally you'd be going to the beach this time of year.
Yeah, a lot of the time, like, you know, as soon as the kids are out of school, we're hitting the road for a beach or a lake trip or something like that. Our plans are, our schedule's a little bit different this summer. So I don't know. I like grilling out, but I have no specific plans around Memorial Day.
Ray Lee, before I get to the NBA and Grizzlies and everything else, Ray Liotta died yesterday. Well, that was sort of a stunner. He seemed a little young to be toppling off. And
yeah, I think he was like 70.
67.
Right? Okay.
67.
Right.
For those of us who are 60, that seems a little young.
No, it is on the young side. Yeah.
So were you a Ray Liotta fan? And the best known, of course, for Goodfellas and Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I don't care about Field of Dreams.
Right.
Goodfellas is considered, and I'm among those who agree with the consideration, one of the great films of, you know, the last few decades, definitely.
It didn't win much. It only won, Joe Pesci won, right? Or whatever.
You're talking about the Oscars?
Yeah,
but the Oscars have nothing to do with good movies,
I know,
right?
But I was surprised. Like, I went back and we looked at it. Yes, they didn't.
Yeah, it was too good to win an Oscar. I don't know what won an Oscar.
Right.
Something a little bit,
I don't know what an Oscar,
you know, Dances with Wolves or something probably won the Oscar that year or whatever.
why is it great?
It is... I mean, it's great because of the how, right? Not the what, right? It's the texture of it. It's the richness and the texture and the tapestry of the story that Scorsese's telling and how he tells it. So it's sort of hard to describe, like, why it's good. Everything about it's good, from the script to the acting to the camera work to the whole shebang. Right. But to me, it's probably Scorsese's probably the greatest living American filmmaker. Maybe just the greatest living filmmaker, and Goodfellas is a top two Scorsese movie. And so,
what's the other one?
Taxi Driver, which is a much harder watch.
Right.
A different kind of movie. But Goodfellas is an extraordinary piece of cinema, and Ray Liotta is the star of that movie, and it's great in it. And that really dominates over really everything else he did. But he did lots of other stuff. There's a movie that I really love from the mid-80s that was one of his earlier movies called Something Wild, which is sort of a modern screwball comedy.
Right.
That sort of takes a dark turn, and he is sort of why it takes a dark turn. And it's him and Jeff Daniels and a young Melanie Griffith, directed by Jonathan Demme, who went on to do Silence of the Lambs and some other big movies like that. Something Wild's great. So if you're looking for, like, an off-the-radar Ray Liotta pick, that would be my pick.
Chris, you were correct. Dances with Wolves won.
Yeah. Right. That's more of an Oscar
movie. Hated Dances with Wolves.
I think most people do.
Yeah. No, I mean... 30 years later, what has stood the test of time? Dances with Wolves or Goodfellas?
Who else, dude? Do you have the whole that year? Who was, like, best actor that year?
Best actor was Jeremy Irons from A Reversal of Fortune. Also nominated was Costner from Dances with Wolves, De Niro in Awakenings, Gerard Depardieu from
Look at you. You went just went to Cyrano France. Rolls off the tongue.
Some great Wikipedia.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Richard Harris was also nominated for The Field. And then Pesci won for
Best Supporting,
beating out Bruce Davison, Andy Garcia, Graham Greene, and Al Pacino.
Graham Greene. Anyway, Driving Miss Daisy won an Oscar, not, you know, Do the Right Thing or whatever. This is the way the Oscars work. But whatever. Goodfellas, one of the great American movies.
You, by the way, you said you don't care about Field of Dreams. I don't care about Field of Dreams. He is well known as
I'm more of a Bull Durham guy.
I'm totally a Bull Durham guy.
Like, to me, this is a philosophical test. It's almost like a personality test of what it to you is like an ideal like approach to baseball or like how you approach life kind of thing. I'm a Bull Durham guy, not a Field of Dreams.
Strikeouts
guy.
Are fascists.
I yesterday had lunch with former Washington Post columnist. This is what happens when you turn 60. I can't even remember someone's freaking name.
Boswell?
No.
George Will?
No. He's the guy 60 Minutes did a
Sally piece, Quinn?
Say 60 piece, 60 Minutes did a piece on it. Like, how can I? I'm literally just having a mind. Anyway, I'm going to get to the name in a second. But he once taught a class at Bradley on best sports films. He's not a film guy. He teaches mostly journalism.
I took a baseball literature class in college.
And
Dave
Kindred.
All right.
Dave Kindred. And he was in town, and we went to Soulfish and had the Cuban. And
okay, that's a decision. Sure.
You don't like the Cuban?
I've never had it. I don't know. I go to Soulfish, you'd always get I get
the catfish.
It.
I never ordered catfish. Anyway, so he said that he had to persuade him that The Hustler, is it a sports movie? It's a pool. Is it great?
Is that a game or a sport? I don't know. I've seen The Hustler, but it's been many, many, many years. Color of Money another Scorsese movie is a belated sequel to The Hustler, and my memory is that The Color of Money is better than The Hustler. But Hustler's Paul Newman. And it's from the
60s. I asked him what she thought was better, and he the best sports film, and he said, I like The Hustler. But then we had this exact discussion about Bull Durham and Field of Dreams. And a lot of people get gauzy and sentimental about fathers and catches with some. Well, I never played catch with my father.
Not only
am I
a Bull Durham guy, I'm a Bad News Bears guy. Like, to me, that's more my approach.
Yeah. And Bull Durham is far and away my favorite Costner movie because I think Costner got sort of like Dances with Wolves, self-indulgent and treacly.
To me, Bull Durham, just like Goodfellas, very different, but like Goodfellas, one of the great American movies of the last 30, 40 years.
All right. Moving on, you did a piece on the Grizzlies and their approach to the off-season. And you started, it starts because you had a conversation, you were on a podcast recently, where you said in some ways they're not in that different a situation than Milwaukee Bucks. Explain.
Yeah, so I was going to write, and I'm going to do this next week now. I was going to do sort of a preliminary draft, free agency trade, how you should think about these three things, and I'll do that next week. I was going to do that this week, and then I realized it was going to be 3,000 words if I included that with what I'd already written. But I did this podcast, Seth Partnow, who used to be in the front office for the Bucks and now is an analyst for The Athletic and other places. He had me on. I've been on this podcast before, but he had me on this week. He wanted me to go on with Eric Nim, who's the Athletic writer for the Bucks, which I thought was sort of interesting. I've never done that kind of podcast before, like me and some other random writer are on the same thing. And it turned out I thought it was well conceived. It was these are two teams that fell short of the playoffs relative to what their hopes were. The Bucks were trying to defend their title. The Grizzlies were the 2 seed, and they lost in the second round. And it was a how does losing early impact how they think about their offseason? What kind of pressure do these two teams feel? And it was a great discussion. At the end of it, I realized, you know, I should just write all this. Like, you know, it's a 58-minute podcast. As long as my column is, you can read it in 5 minutes. So I just decided I should write all this for a local readership, all the stuff I just said on this pod, basically. And so I've sort of lost track of your question, but
how are they like the Bucks?
So they're like they're like the Bucks. You could argue they are opposite ends of a competitive arc. Like the Grizzlies are just now entering theirs, and one of the arguments on the pod was, are the Bucks exiting theirs? And my answer was no, the Bucks are not. The Bucks would have won a title this year. I think if Chris Middleton doesn't get hurt, there's no reason they can't. They're not one of the favorites next year. So to me, they're in the heat of their competitive arc. They're not at the end of it. But they're similar in that they're both relatively small market teams. I think Milwaukee you would call a small market.
Absolutely.
Right? So they're small market teams built around that don't have a dynastic framework. They have one, they're each built around one true star. And that one true star is flanked by two sort of borderline all-star players who complement the one star. And then the rest of the structure is just a well-assembled, well-coached, well-managed.
Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton are this Jaren Jackson Jr. Yeah. and Desmond Bane.
And with maybe Dylan Brooks. If you want to say Holiday and Middleton are better than Bane and Jackson, that's true. But Bane and Jackson are 22 and 23.
Right.
Holiday and Middleton, as good as they are not perennial all-stars. They're sort of borderline all-stars.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's what Jackson just first team all defense. Desmond Bane just averaged 20-something points in the playoffs. I think they're both headed to that same spot. And Ja Morant, not as good as Giannis because no one is right now.
Right.
But there's some similarities there. He's a second team all NBA. He's an all NBA player. They're the two best paint scorers in the entire league. Right. And you have offenses built around all NBA players who dominate scoring in the paint. And have, in Giannis's case, has made a commitment, and Ja's case will very soon, I believe, made long-term commitments to these well-run small market franchises. And so I think the Bucks are both a reasonable and hopeful comp for the Grizzlies. And there was some lamenting on the podcast about, like, you know, the pressure, you know, you can't have a long run in the NBA anymore. And I said, well, wait a minute. Milwaukee's been in the playoffs for 6 years, and they're going to be back next year, and they've gotten a title out of it. To me, that's great.
Yeah. One of the key differences, of course, as you point out in the piece, is that Giannis is great. It's not just that he's great at both ends.
Right.
Which is the chief distinction with Ja.
Yes.
And also leads to the second point you made, which you hinted at yesterday, or talked briefly about yesterday, which is whatever the Grizzlies do, you can focus on backup point guard or whatnot. But the main thing they have to do is figure out how to get better at half-court offense without sacrificing their defense.
I think when you step back from specific positions and roles, which you have to think about that too, but when you step back from that, the paradigm you lay on top of that is we have to be a better half-court offensive team. The Grizzlies, as good as they were on the season offensively, they were 22nd in the half-court, and when you get into playoff basketball, you're going to be playing more in the half-court. So the main thing they need to do is be a better half-court offensive team. But to me, you can't pursue that at the cost of your team defense because you need to back up Ja Morant with a great team defense around him. And that's sort of the tricky needle they have.
So, for example, if you could get a Jordan Poole type player, that would not – it would certainly help your half-court offense.
It'd be a trade-off, and you'd have to weigh that trade-off. To me, I am not willing – to me, I would personally feel protective of my defense.
Right. The challenge here, of course – and which gets to another point that you made in the column, and is that everyone wants this. Like, yeah. I was literally reading the piece on what Dallas needs now, right? So now Dallas...
Need a wing player who can knock down great offense and knock down shots.
They also need
defense.
A center. Most people think they need a center to play pick and roll with Luka, but then the main, they need wing players who can score and guard. Like, everybody needs wing players who can score and guard.
Every team in the NBA needs this and a wing player who can score and guard. So the Grizzlies need a backup point guard and a wing player who can score and guard. Dallas needs a center and a wing player who can score and guard. Right.
And what's striking is, and maybe in your pieces next week, you will come up with names.
Piece next week. Don't promise multiple. I'm only doing one.
Piece next week. Yeah. You will come up with names. But like I read Hollinger's piece yesterday.
Yeah,
Did you read it?
He beat me to publication by about 3 hours on that.
So
I was annoyed.
I read them both. Reading his did not. Well, what's the damnedest thing about this whole thing is that no one has a name. Like there's no names. There's not even like hypothetical names. Like I read the whole Hollinger thing. And honestly, Hollinger's large conclusion was this may not be the summer. They can do things, and I wanted to ask you how this would play out. They can do things to preserve their flexibility going forward for other options. But then what you said in your column today was truly the best place to find these things is the draft. Maybe the draft.
Right. Well, I mean, these things aren't mutually exclusive because one of the things that John suggested, and I've never said this before, so if I suggest it, maybe I'll credit him next week. He suggested, you know, trading a current pick for future picks with the idea being – that pushes your trade value into the future.
Right.
So if there's no trade to be made this summer, instead of using both your draft picks either to take players or to pair them and move up, maybe you try to move one of them for a future first, and that keeps your stockpile of trade assets in place if you're not going to use them now. I think there's a lot of right. There's a
he also
a
suggested
thing.
Giving con this you have to explain to me giving contracts to
yeah I'm
to,
skeptical
to player which could then be tradable contracts. Explain what even Jared Culver he mentioned in that example, but he also mentioned Tyus in that structure and others.
when John was in town during the playoffs, this is something we actually did talk about, and he sort of made this point to me in person that maybe the answer
how would it work?
Maybe the answer on Tyus is you give him like one year, 15, 19, whatever huge contract, and then you know the way.
How does that preserve your? What does it mean? Like what's functionally you trying to accomplish? With
well,
that?
You
besides get the player.
Tyus Jones and Kyle Anderson were on expiring contracts this past year,
right?
So now the contracts are going to expire.
Right.
You sign them to new contracts that would be new expiring contracts.
Right.
There's some complicated stuff where you have to put some team option-y stuff to allow the trades. I don't even want to get in the weeds on that. But if you sign them to sort of short-term deals, then they're getting their money and you're getting the player, but you're also retaining the possibility of trading those contracts, you know, if something pops up during the season. I am skeptical about that notion on Tyus Jones because I think the market for him is rich enough. That why is he taking a one- or two-year deal if he can get a four-year deal somewhere for good money? Kyle Anderson?
Could work.
If you wanted to go to Kyle Anderson and say, hey, take $15 million just for next year, I think he'd say yes. I don't know that the Grizzlies are going to do that.
Right.
Even with the idea of, well, it'll be a contract we can trade.
But the underlying motivation really was, it seemed to me, let's preserve, whether it's draft picks or financial flexibility, because there's nothing out there
right.
or likely looking around, there doesn't seem to be anything out there. Like people, everyone wants an upgrade on Dylan Brooks. You can't even get another Dylan Brooks.
Right. Yeah, and so the idea of you have good assets now, but the move is not out there to be made. Can you preserve
right.
the same quality of asset going forward? I do think that that's a reasonable way to look at your team. On the other hand, like if you take these picks at 22 and 29, or if you move around, Zach Kleiman has a history right. of moving around.
Always does.
But if you take players and they end up being good players, now they're good players on good contracts, and those are great right. assets too.
Right.
Right? And so you can say, well, let's trade this pick at 22 for a future first, and we got this future first. Well, if you hit on the pick at 22, like, you know, Desmond Bane's worth more than a future first,
clearly.
Right?
Yes.
And so there's that aspect to it.
I think you can hope that it's awfully hard to hope for Desmond Bane, Desmond Bane.
But like Brandon
yes,
Clark.
Right. Brandon Clark's
you know,
a useful
I mean,
player.
You know, yeah. if you find good players and they're on these rookie contracts that are relatively cheap, they're also going to be trade assets.
By the way, Jason asked me this question. Would you be interested if you could move up and get Jalen Duren? Would he be a player who would interest you?
Yeah, I think he might. I haven't done much in the way of scouting the draft, but I've seen Jalen Duren play like,
right.
more than any of these
right.
guys, really. I think Jalen Duren's going to be good. And I think he'll be good in a way that I think would have a home on the Memphis
right.
Grizzlies. So, yeah, I would welcome Jalen Duren on the
It's not the priority, though.
No, but like your priority is not something you're going to get at
right,
you know,
time, right.
22 or 29 or whatever you're going to use to trade up to like 11 or I mean I,
right.
I don't you know.
Yeah. All right, you can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian, and if you're an Athletic subscriber, you can read John Hollinger's piece as well. Read Chris's first so he this time even though
right.
he'll get back at you. The Warriors won last night. Beating Dallas, yet another game that was not particularly compelling, 17 at the half. Klay was good again. It is kind of remarkable. You talk about extended excellence, and obviously the Warriors different because they had, you know, the benefit
right.
of Kevin Durant in the midst of it. But whenever they've had Klay Thompson healthy, he's 6-for-6. Like, last 8 years, whenever he's been healthy, which is the 6 of those 8 years, they have gone to the finals.
Yes, I think even the Warriors and Warriors fans will tell you this team is not as good as those previous
right.
teams. It got good again in the context of a league that's not as strong at the top. And so, you know, they're not back. They're back where they were in terms of making the
right.
finals. That team is not back where it was. But I think it does show you that if you have, and again, what they did is not repeatable in terms of the magnitude
right.
of success. But in terms of having an extended run of having a good contending team, you know, the only thing I know Andre Iguodala is still there, but he's not playing,
right.
or he's back there, but he's not playing. But the only thing that's really a commonality from the beginning to now is Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green. Everything else has totally changed, and Steve Kerr, but everything else has totally changed around them. So the idea of having a tight core and keeping that core together for a decade and then just shuffling in and out
right.
around
seeing
it,
what happens.
To me, if you're the Grizzlies, and I'm not saying Ja Morant, Desmond, and Jaren Jackson is going to be Klay, Steph, and Draymond because they're not. But could they be in the playoffs for 10 straight years? And
could they be Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, and
right,
Marcus Smart
right.
or whatever?
So you're in the playoffs for 10 straight years, and year 10, the entire rest of the team is different than year one, other than those three guys, that is 100% something that could happen. Yeah.
It is interesting. I mean, we see Boston has sort of perking along, and then you pop up and you have that year. It's what you call the puncher's chance tier.
Yeah.
Miami's sort of in that tier. You know, they were in the finals last year. Like, you teams jump up and breaks go their way. And
yeah, you sort of bob up and down, but like every year you try to give yourself the best chance and you move stuff around, and like, and then some years pop more than others, but you're like consistently good and consistently interesting. I'm all for that.
Dallas is going to be a taxpayer for a team, like a good team. But if you've got to pay Jalen Brunson $20 million, which is, seems like you'll have to pay him something that begins with a two, right?
Yep.
It will be, in addition to what you're paying him, it will be an $80 million tax bill.
Is that right?
Yes.
That
is what I read this morning on ESPN.
I would need to look at the books and figure out how that's possible, because I know Luka's about to sign a Supermax, but like, where's the money going on that team? Like, look around. Where's the money?
Right.
Where's the money? I don't know. I mean, they extended Dorian Finney-Smith, but they didn't extend him to some kind of max type deal. I don't. To me, and this is something I wrote about a little bit in that column, because it was asked to me about Dallas. And to me, even though Dallas has the greater individual star, and Luka is a greater star than Ja Morant, and Dallas has gone one step further in these playoffs, to me, Dallas, there's a lot more pressure on them this summer than the Grizzlies, because I think if you're the Grizzlies, you look at what you have and what you've done, and you feel much better about that success repeating, or you building on it going forward. And if you're Dallas, you look at it and you say, well, Dorian Finney-Smith's already 29, and Jalen Brunson, I don't know what he's like 26 or something like that, 26, 27 probably at this point, because he was a four-year college guy, and now he's a free agent. And like, to me, you got where you got off of Luka and luck. And good defense.
It was interesting. You called it a low-pressure summer for the Grizzlies. Whereas
that was the animating conversation of that podcast, and that was my response to it, yeah.
I think it's a low – because a lot of the scuttlebutt is, oh, now they're going to do something to make that next move.
Yeah.
But you actually think it's a low-pressure
– I think it's a low-pressure summer. I think if the right thing's not there, they have zero reason to force the issue. I think they can roll it back and be really good.
The other NBA news of note was that Zion was cleared to play without restrictions. When he was asked earlier this year whether he would sign a max, he said, I could not sign it fast enough.
I would hope so.
A 5-year, $186 million max. How big a threat are the Pelicans to the Grizzlies?
I think short term, like in terms of next season, I think a pretty big one. I don't believe in the long-term stability of that project as much as I believe in the Grizzlies, in part because I have less faith in Zion staying healthy, and in part because the good supporting cast they've assembled is an older, like CJ McCollum. Again, I don't have ages in front of me, but he's probably like 28, 29, 30.
Right, yeah.
And Jonas Valanciunas is 28, 29, 30. And you know, to me, it is not, I don't see that being the same team 3 years from now. I think it's very possible that next season, maybe Zion has a healthy season.
Right.
And everything comes together.
And better than the Grizzlies.
That team could be better than the Grizzlies. But I don't believe in the long-term sustainability of it as much. To me, the one thing that could happen, like in terms of dooming the Pelicans, and I don't wish this on them or anyone, but you can see it. Like, Zion comes back healthy. He has a healthy season. He signs the max extension this summer. He has a healthy season.
Gets
he makes
Supermax.
All NBA, gets the Supermax, and then gets hurt again. Right? Like that's a possibility.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it. We will talk to you Tuesday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.